Welcome to Federal Insights for May, sponsored by Verizon.
Welcome to another edition of Federal Insights. I'm Eric White. The 5G rollout is a crowd favorite among elected leaders and policymakers. Consumers also want a faster, more reliable internet. But 5G Nirvana will require lots of new infrastructure and the money and brain power to build it all. Brendan Carr, a member of the Federal Communications Commission, has come up with a plan to help train the people needed to build 5G. Federal News Network's Jared Serbu spoke with Carr about his ideas.
So we're in the midst of this really massive infrastructure build-out that we need to get 5G built out across the country. We need to see hundreds of thousands of new small cells being added in communities around the country, and we're starting to see that. The challenge is, how do we have the skilled workforce in place to actually build and maintain all of this infrastructure? That's why we focused on this community college program in Aiken Tech in South Carolina. The idea there is, through a 12-week program, you can come in with virtually no skills at all, and you can come out able to get a job, solidly middle-class job, with mobility upwards from there, in this growing tower tech business. And by housing this program in a community college, you get access to Pell Grants, military funding for educational purposes. Plus, community colleges are really rooted in their local community, and so can identify people that want to transition into this type of job.
Yeah, and I think importantly, this sort of workforce is going to be needed everywhere in the country if there's going to be a successful build out, right?
That's exactly right. And I've traveled a lot around the country in about a year and a half on this job. I think I've been to about 25 states at this point. And everywhere I go, almost to a person, the tower crews that I spend time with say that they need a lot more people. They effectively need to double their workforce to keep up with this new infrastructure build. And that means adding 20,000 new workers, new tower techs in this space. So we want to build on the Aiken program and have it so that there's community colleges throughout the country where people can go take this quick 12-week class and then move into this field.
And what can the FCC do specifically to encourage more programs like this other than publicizing them?
Yeah, we're doing a couple things. One, obviously, on the regulatory front, we're trying to cut a lot of the red tape that's slowing down the build-out of this next-generation infrastructure. As the programs, we're working with a lot of groups to replicate the Aiken program and see where we can help stand up programs like that in other community colleges. There's also some legislation pending in Congress, Congressman Loebsack and Congressman Mark Wayne Mullen, that are looking to provide funding for programs that these could potentially be funded through that type of legislation.
For people who are not intimately familiar with the technology behind 5G, could you just say a word about why this build requires so many more personnel than previous generations of wireless technology? And along with that, are these jobs sustainable once the initial build is finished? Are these folks' skills that they're learning now going to be usable over the long term?
Yeah, absolutely. So right now in the country, we have about roughly 200,000 cell sites, and that's what we've used for 3G, that's what we've used for 4G. And the spectrum that those cell sites used is essentially a mix of what we call low band and mid band spectrum. With 5G, we need to add about 100 times the number of cell sites in the country that we have now. And the reason for that is 5G is going to use, for the first time, a true mix of spectrum, high band, mid band, and low band. All of that spectrum has different propagation characteristics, which is to say it covers different distances. So instead of having one tower in a community that covers 20 miles, we need to start layering in on top of that, you know, 10 to 100 times more cell sites. And that added capacity is what's going to increase speeds. So for instance, with 5G, you can get at your home wirelessly the same speed and quality internet access that up till now you had to rely on a fixed connection, the cable provider or other wireline provider. And so as these networks are built out, we need the workforce to do it. But just as importantly is to maintain these cell sites. So we're not anticipating a big dip in the demand for tower workers after this 5G build is complete.
What are the other workforce requirements beyond the folks that are going to be needed to climb towers and install the new equipment? What about on the more high-end skilled side? Do you see gaps there that need to be addressed?
Yes, absolutely. So, you know, we've been focused very much, obviously, on the actual physical build-out. You have to have RF propagation skills, you know, physical climbing ability. But once we get the 5G economy out there, it's going to unleash opportunities across the board. And just think back 10 years ago when we were on the cusp of this shift from 3G to 4G. People didn't have smartphones. We didn't have the app economy. Today, the app economy alone is a $950 billion economy. And that type of ability, the ability to create, you know, the Ubers of the world, that's going to be replicated again in the 5G space. So there's going to be all kinds of new telehealth applications, smart ag applications, smart city applications, connected cars. And we're going to need engineers, coders, and innovators that can take this new high-speed platform and create opportunities on it. So we have to make sure through STEM education and otherwise that people have the skills to take advantage of these new 5G connections.
All right, that's a good place to pivot and zoom out just a little bit to talk about where we're going and how long it's going to be before we can realize all the benefits that you just mentioned. And you've called 2019 the year of 5G. What exactly is going to happen this year, would you predict?
Yeah, we're in really good shape right now. So last year, 5G went live in the U.S. in about 14 cities, and that's the largest commercial deployment of any country in the world. This year, we're expecting to see 5G in at least 40 cities. So internet speeds now around the country are up about 40%. The number of small cells, again, the building blocks of 5G, have quadrupled compared to a year before. So the build-out is happening now. We're starting to see it in an increasing number of U.S. cities, and that's all a great thing.
That's FCC Commissioner Brendan Carr speaking with Federal News Network's Jared Serbu. Hear more of the interview after a quick break. I'm Eric White.
Critical missions require a reliable and secure wireless network. Verizon partners with federal agencies to enable missions now with 4G and IoT, and in the future with 5G mobility solutions. Federal agencies choose the wireless network RootMetrics ranks number one overall network performance for the 11th consecutive time. Get connected and stay connected with Verizon for all your mission needs. VerizonEnterprise.com/federalmobility.
As with any new technology, there's always concern older, outdated regulations may hamper the build-out process. As FCC Commissioner Brendan Carr tells Federal News Network's Jared Serbu, the agency hopes reform efforts it's made will ensure 5G technology has all the room it needs.
Those results that we're seeing, sort of putting the U.S. in the lead position right now with 5G build, those results, I think, are a direct connection to regulatory reforms that we've gotten across the finish line here at the commission. So for instance, when we took over these positions about a year and a half, 2 years ago, the federal government treated every new cell site, whether it's this backpack-sized small cell going on an existing utility pole, the same from a red tape perspective as a new 200-foot tower. So there were environmental rules, historic preservation rules, very costly regulations you had to go through. Well, we excluded small cells from that federal approach that made sense for big towers. That one decision cut around $2 billion in costs, but more importantly, it sped the deployment of small cells. So one provider, for instance, said that they're deploying them at six times the pace as before that one decision. Another set of decisions we engaged in looked at the state and local process, effectively the zoning process that takes place when you look to put up a small cell. And we put some guardrails in place at that level to make sure there's not exorbitant fees that are applied. We put in place what we call shot clocks, which makes sure there's timely decision making. Again, at about another $2 billion in regulatory costs that were cleared by engaging in that reform. So we took pretty bold, decisive action early on. And the data we're seeing now are showing some good results.
At the state and local level, I'm curious, was it kind of the same issue that we had at the federal level where a tower was treated as a tower no matter how big or how small it was?
That's right. We've seen a handful of states and cities that understood the difference between a big macro tower and a small cell. So a lot of those cities and states passed small cell reform bills that, again, addressed fees, addressed timelines that made sense for small cells. A lot of other cities, though, particularly what we call big must-serve cities, the cities that are going to get 5G no matter what because the population densities are so big, they were looking at 5G as essentially a revenue-generating opportunity, the rollout of 5G as an opportunity to impose a tax. And in some places, cities were charging $1 million just to get the right to come in and then deploy 5G in a city. So we, at the federal level, stepped in to make sure that every community is going to get a fair shot and that this limited capital isn't sucked up into a handful of must-serve big cities.
Has it been a consideration at the commission level to make sure that you're at least not putting a huge dent in city revenue? Because they do rely, to some extent, on some of these licensing and franchise fees to maintain current operations, right?
Yes, what we did was we put some guardrails in place that said cities get to recover a reasonable approximation of their costs. So cities are not going to be bearing the expense associated with 5G. They're going to be fully compensated for their role in this process. What we've tried to shift to, what a lot of cities realize, is if you can enable the build out of 5G, you then get economic opportunity on top of that. Businesses want to come in. You get smart city applications that drive down your cost of running your business, running your city. And so that's how we've tried to approach it.
At the commission level, I mean, besides just telling cities to get out of the way and let industry complete this build out in the most efficacious way possible, to what extent have you seen cities wanting to be partners? And what are some examples of that where they can be enablers rather than just not having regulations in place that impede things?
You know, as I've traveled around the country and spent time, again, in about 25 different states, we've seen some really great examples of that. I was in a relatively small town, Fishers, Indiana, and the mayor there, Mayor Scott Fadness, really got what it means to have next-generation connectivity, and they helped clear the way for small cells. So they got about 60 new small cells in that one town at a point in which some of the biggest cities in the country, San Jose, for example, was putting up zero new small cells. So you can be a leader by putting policies in place that are going to get more connectivity to you. And frankly, it was those policies that the mayor in Fishers, Indiana put in place that we built on at the federal level so that more communities can see the same results that they're already achieving.
And did they tend to see a successful 5G deployment? Do they tend to see a successful 5G deployment being mostly just a good thing for their citizens, or does it also improve the delivery of actual city services like public safety?
Exactly. It's really across the board. So we see it in new telehealth applications that are going out there. It's going to help pave the way for a lot of autonomous vehicle transactions, but you also get smart city benefits from traffic lights to street lights to water to sewer can all benefit once you get this new platform deployed in your city.
I want to zoom out again just a little bit and talk about why 5G is different. I mean, in what ways is this particular generation of technology more revolutionary than, you know, evolutionary? How is it different from the move from 3G to 4G or 2G to 3G?
Yeah, so we're going essentially to a point at which speeds are going to be 100 times faster. And that's key for enabling, you know, all sorts of new innovations. But also it's the ability to have one platform that's going to bring together a lot of different devices. So effectively, to truly enable the Internet of Things, to have everything connected on one platform, 4G has a limit in terms of how many devices can be online in a given area at a point in time. So that's been a limiter so far in terms of the affordability of moving towards the Internet of Things, greater connectivity and manufacturing. So it's really the upgrade that we need to see in the real world a lot of the cutting-edge innovations that we've just been talking about for the past few years.
FCC Commissioner Brendan Carr speaking with Federal News Network's Jared Serbu. We'll have the rest of our interview with him after one more break. I'm Eric White.
Critical missions require a reliable and secure wireless network. Verizon partners with federal agencies to enable missions now with 4G and IoT, and in the future with 5G mobility solutions. Federal agencies choose the wireless network RootMetrics ranks number one overall network performance for the 11th consecutive time. Get connected and stay connected with Verizon for all your mission needs. VerizonEnterprise.com/federal mobility.
we continue our interview with Brendan Carr, who's a member of the Federal Communications Commission.
You mentioned earlier that 5G is going to rely on a much larger variety of wavelengths, much bigger areas of spectrum or different areas of spectrum than traditional cellular technologies have. How are we doing in your assessment in terms of making that spectrum licensed or even unlicensed available to the operators who need it to pull off these massive bandwidth increases?
We really prioritize that both here at the FCC and really across the Trump administration as well. Right now, the U.S. has made more spectrum available for 5G and other next-gen connectivity than any other country in the world. So spectrum is key. That's one piece. The second piece where we started was this infrastructure. How do we clear the way for that infrastructure to be built? And then the third piece was workforce. And so we're starting to see all three of those key ingredients for 5G get pushed across the finish line.
And you mentioned earlier that one thing this will probably do is give people more options in terms of who their home internet service provider is going to be. And I'm curious, do you think we get to a point where we're all 100% reliant on wireless providers and we don't really think about fiber being run to our houses anymore or relying on our cable companies as ISPs? Or is there still a role for wired internet once 5G is fully up and running?
Certainly there's going to be a role. I think that's why we're at such an interesting inflection point for consumers. We see this new generation, for instance, of low Earth orbit satellites that are in the process of being launched that can give more choice. This 5G wireless to the home is going to give you more choice, and you're going to continue to have wired broadband, both in your home in some circumstances, but of course, for 5G, we need a massive new deployment of wired broadband to connect all these antennas. So I think consumers are going to start thinking of connectivity and thinking less about wireless, satellite, wired connections, and the distinctions between those technologies are going to start to blur. So there's going to be an important role for all of it. I just think consumers are going to think more connectivity, less technology specific, because they're all going to start performing so well.
Yeah, really what I'm getting at is, and I'm wondering if you happen to live in a town where the only real broadband provider is your cable company, and then suddenly each of the cellular phone providers are also providing broadband connectivity. Is there a space or is there an impetus for that wired provider to continue to innovate, or have they kind of reached the limitations of their physical plant?
We are seeing a lot of innovation still on the wired plant, so to speak. So a lot of the wired providers are pushing towards 10G, which is 10 gigabits of speed to your home, which in theory is faster even than what you can do with some of the early 5G models. We're also seeing a lot of the wired competitors move into offering some sort of wireless offering themselves, whether it's a 5G style fixed wireless to the home or whether it's a complement to your home broadband that you get a cellular service when you're outside of the house. So you're seeing competitive responses from both wired and wireless, which I think is all going to be great for the consumer.
I want to switch to a different level of competition, which is sort of at the nation state level. And this comes up a lot in the popular media, sort of the race against China to be first in a nationwide 5G deployment. And I'm just curious for your views on why it's important to be first. I mean, does it matter that much if we're 6 months or a year behind or we get there second?
It does matter that we're right up there with China. And about a year ago, there was a report released that put the U.S. in third place with China leading the way on 5G. In light of the reforms that we've done the last year, these infrastructure reforms, putting more spectrum out there, the U.S. leapfrogged to be in the pole position with China in terms of this race to 5G. And why does that matter? Well, the country that's first to 5G is going to see the capital and the investment needed to innovate on that platform flow there first. The U.S. benefited tremendously by being first to 4G. A lot of the 4G-enabled app economy that you see today are U.S. companies because we won that race to 4G. It poured billions of dollars effectively into the U.S. economy that would have gone to Europe or China had they beat us to 4G. So the stakes for 5G are going to be even higher than that. It's really going to be about economic dominance for the coming decade. And that's why we're working so hard to make sure the U.S. is not just competitive, but it's leading on this push to 5G.
I guess the last thing I'd ask you is, you've talked a lot about what the commission has done to enable an accelerated 5G deployment. What do you see as the remaining challenges to that, challenges or barriers? What could still go wrong here?
I think we still have work to do. I think standing up this workforce initiative to make sure we can build this out is something I'm focused on. There's some support that we can do on the telehealth side to make sure communities can benefit from these next generation telehealth applications that we're working on. And I think there's work we can do to make sure rural communities continue to see next gen connectivity. Some of that's going to require some federal subsidies, because it's going to be a lot of parts of this country where the private sector business case for these investments aren't there. So we have to continue to support deployments across the country so that no matter where you live, you get a fair shot at this connectivity.
Yeah, I'm very glad you brought up the rural piece of this, because I'd like you to talk a little bit more about the specific challenges there. And do you need some sort of universal service fund type approach to subsidize build outs in places where it doesn't make any sense to have microcells every 100 yards?
Yeah, exactly. So we have this federal universal service program right now. It's about a $10 billion a year program, and we're in the process of reorienting that to support broadband connectivity in parts of the country where there's not really a private sector business case. So, for instance, it can cost $30,000 to run a mile of fiber across rural America. And in parts of the country where you have one or two people per square mile, you can quickly see how without some sort of federal program, it's not going to be economical to serve those areas. So we are focused on making sure that the benefits of broadband go everywhere. And I've been in a lot of small towns in rural America. I've been to large paper manufacturing mills, seed processing plants, the biggest employers in these rural communities. And to a person, they tell me that without the broadband that they have right now, they would have to move out of that community, and that would be a tremendous job loss. So when I think about the support we have to provide so every community gets this connection, I think of it through that lens of that broader economic impact on the community.
But if I hear you right, it sounds like the technology still works fine in rural areas, as long as it's funded and as long as it's operating on the right frequency bands.
That's right. Yeah. We, again, with this mix of spectrum, high band, mid band, low band, 5G is going to be pushed through all of those spectrum bands. So in rural America, there may be communities that rely more on low band 5G or fixed wireless 5G than on small cell based 5G, but we're going to see a mix of those different technologies in different communities.
Brendan Carr is an FCC commissioner speaking with Federal News Network's Jared Serbu. If you missed any of this episode, you can find it online. Go to federalnewsnetwork.com and search Federal Insights. I'm Eric White.
Thank you for listening to Federal Insights for May, sponsored by Verizon on Federal News Radio, part of the Federal News Network.
Critical missions require a reliable and secure wireless network. Verizon partners with federal agencies to enable missions now with 4G and IoT, and in the future with 5G mobility solutions. Federal agencies choose the wireless network RootMetrics ranks number one overall network performance for the 11th consecutive time. Get connected and stay connected with Verizon for all your mission needs. VerizonEnterprise.com/federalmobility.
Did you know that women pilots represent just 6% of all pilots? Women Can Fly wants to change that by introducing girls to career opportunities and sharing the fun and fellowship of general aviation. Come out Saturday, June 22nd to Shannon Airport in Fredericksburg, or Saturday, June 29th to the Warrenton-Fauquier Airport to take a free flight, meet pilots, and learn more about flying. Women Can Fly is a volunteer organization whose mission it is to promote women of all ages to fly. Register at womencanfly.com.